And we are, as a people, inherently and historically
wake up.
Opposed to secret societies, the secret oaths, and the secret proceedings.
The show that asks questions about why we don't ask questions.
What the hell is going on?
This is Conspiracy Queries with Alan Parr. Welcome to Conspiracy Queries with Alan Park. It's a radio show about conspiracies and theories and theories of conspiracies. And I'm Alan Park. I'll be asking most of the questions. Sometimes people ask me. I hope you're doing well right now. This is going to be a pretty interesting show. We're going to go in depth with the research-based work of my guest today, John Rappaport. He's been on the show before, very insightful. We went over some information before where John, using logic, wasn't necessarily convinced that Edward Snowden, the leaker, is supposedly who we thought he was. I didn't ask John about an update on Edward, but we'll get to that later. Regardless, lots of great stuff on the show, and I should be so bold as to say this show, if you follow it to its maximum potential, can actually help you think better. So come back after the break and find out how that can be. John Rappaport is with us. Guess what? He was with us last year. Great guest. A lot of good feedback. John is on the line. John offers a very it just makes so much sense when you read what he's got going on there after taking in some of the mainstream media. John's, I find, very funny when he'll take something from mainstream media that's absolutely ridiculous, and then he's been known to do a parody of that and make an equally alarming story, or even more so, and then he has to suffer the slings and arrows of people that are mad that he's writing this because they don't get that he's being sarcastic. But John is a hell of a researcher. He has a lot of information, and he is in California, so I'm jealous. John, how are you?
Very good. Very good. It's kind of cold here today, but probably nothing like what you're experiencing.
Sure. What does that mean for you, kind of cold? What does that mean?
55.
Okay. Yeah. You'll get over it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, John,
right.
Noticed I wanted to have you on the show because we had a great time with you last summer, whenever it was, and a lot of great information. And we talked a little bit at the end of that episode of your, I don't know, is it a life work? The Matrix, Exit from the Matrix, the works that you have done that are basically self-improvement courses and imagination awareness courses and unlimited potential. But you have a very different – this isn't like Anthony Robbins or some kind of strange huckster. You've got like solid, logical, and a course on logic. And I really think it would do the listeners a great service to hear much more about the individual segments within your two great learning tools, if you can – if you're okay with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So
the first collection, these are both huge, but the first one is called The Matrix Revealed, and people can read the breakdown of everything that's in it at my site, nomorefakenews.com. There is a section of many, many interviews that I did with an insider whose pseudonym is Ellis Medavoy. He was a propaganda operative, very high level, who worked for, in general, elites behind the scenes, certain members of the Council on Foreign Relations and other medical groups. And so we met at a point where I was still working on my first book in 1988 called AIDS, Inc.,
AIDS
of the century.
You said AIDS, Inc.?
AIDS, Inc.
AIDS, you know. Okay.
And, you know, he said to me, well, you're on the right track. I can tell you that because I was in charge of a lot of propaganda that was being floated around the world about AIDS. And keep going and so on and so forth. And then sometime later, we connected again. We began to talk in depth. I vetted him to the nth degree to make sure that he was indeed who he says he was. And when I was satisfied, I said, look, how about we do some interviews off the record? In other words, I don't expose who you are, and I'll take down everything you say and print it in my newsletter. And he said, okay, let's try it. Well, this led to, I don't know, all told, maybe 50 or 60 long conversations, some of which are in The Matrix Revealed. And what's different about Ellis is he describes the nuts and bolts of how the people who run this world create reality for everybody else, not just in general vague terms, but in very sophisticated terms, and how they operate with reporters, how they operate with editors, how they operate with all kinds of media outlets, but also on a psychological level of mind control, how he views the public mind and how it can be manipulated in terms of rhythms, frequencies, pace, which words flow in which way, altering people's sense of time as they either read or listen or watch reports about what's going on in the world. Extremely profound stuff that I had never encountered from anybody before. And I got much more involved and engrossed and interested as these interviews went on and on and on. So many of those interviews are reproduced in The Matrix Revealed. And the reason that I put them there is because rather than trying to frighten people into feeling that there is no hope, what Medavoy offers is, in a sense, look, here is how we build reality for you. Here's how it's really done. We're the painters. We're, you know, so to speak. We're the movie makers. We're the directors and the producers of the stage play called Reality. And this is how we put it on, and this is how we rope you in. Well, the implication, which he was very aware of, was that the individual is completely capable of creating reality as well for himself or herself. And if you understand how reality is being created for you, you have a much better chance of creating the reality that you want. And since he reformed himself and realized that he was off on a course of extreme evil and retired, he wanted to somehow expose this in some way as to what he was doing with that hope in mind. So that makes up one mega section of The Matrix Revealed.
Okay, John, let me ask you, when you say you vetted Ellis, and I've read a lot of this stuff already, it's really amazing. What did you find out about him? I mean, without giving anything away that you have a trust, perhaps, but I mean, what was he? Was he an interloper who was kind of a bit of a spy for the Illuminati, or was he a willing participant? And what kind
of?
Oh
no, he was a willing participant. I mean, he was a hired gun. That was his work, his life's work. He was quite happy to be doing it at one point, you know, or for a long time, because he had such a low opinion of the human race that he felt that the only way that the world could survive is if populations were put under extreme control. So, you know, that was his dedication to that mission. And one of the ways that he functioned was, as he described it to me in great detail, he said, I rarely talk to reporters. He said, but I know who their reliable sources are. He's now talking about big-time mainstream reporters. He said, I deal with their reliable sources. And I nudge them and move them, these reliable sources, over into seeing things my way, into taking a certain position on key issues like what is the medical cartel really doing to people, what about globalism, where is it really going, et cetera, et cetera, on the major issues of our time. And he said, I influence reliable sources in different ways so that when reporters contact them, then these reliable sources feed the reporters the information that I want them to feed them.
Yeah.
So he was like two levels at least removed from the scene, and he had a very accurate picture of the way mass media work. And so he was able to change, alter, transform all sorts of stories into exactly the way his handlers wanted him to. But he worked as an independent. He would receive an assignment. Okay, here we go. You know, we want to present a certain view about AIDS or about globalism. And this is the bottom line that we want people to believe.
Or global warming or climate change
or
carbon
footprints. Yeah, any of those kinds of subjects, yeah.
Sure.
He did tend to specialize in science, but not only science, you know. And go, do it. And he would do it, and he would be on a handsome budget, and he would have free rein, and he had other people that worked for him. And his job was to make things happen, and he did. And in fact, he would sometimes see how a story that was counter to the vision that he wanted to present was starting to break out in major media, and so one of his jobs was to put out fires, to discredit people who were starting to appear more influential than he wanted them to be. And one of those people was Dr. Peter Duisberg, who worked at UC Berkeley, who had written a very compelling piece in 1987 in which he stated, there is no reason to believe that HIV causes AIDS. Well, this would have upset the global apple cart on a whole agenda having to do with AIDS. That's, you know, I could talk about for 3 hours. And so Medavoy's job became, I've got to make sure that this guy Duisberg is totally discredited, is made to look like a complete conspiracy theorist, a wacko, a crazy, that nobody will listen to. And in fact, that's exactly what happened to Duisberg. His lab was taken away from him at UC Berkeley. He was renowned as one of the great molecular biologists in the world, and eventually it all came to students are advised not to study with Duisberg because this could taint their later careers. So, you know, this is how he operated.
Sorry, and what was the plank that that they said Duisberg was guilty of in order to strip him of his credibility?
Duisberg was saying there's no reason to believe that HIV causes AIDS.
Sure.
AIDS is something else entirely. And once you open up that can of worms, which I did in my book, then you begin to see what the real agenda of AIDS and HIV is. Just to give you a brief example.
We'll get to that right after this break. How is it that that they were able to, you know, make those conclusions?
The conclusions that, you mean HIV causes AIDS?
Yeah, and then having people, you know, come to the conclusion that that's the case, and then this one powerful researcher who really knows what he's talking about somehow has his counter opinion completely buried. So how do they sell? How do they sell to the cognizant other scientists, or are they? Is it as easy as you know? They've got something on them, or
yeah,
turning up dead like a banker, like that's been happening, like, you know, lately,
yeah,
4, 5, 6 a week or something, and it's all definitely suicide. I mean, how do they do this?
Okay, there are various methods, but one of them is they appeal to a primary target's ego. I'm now talking about a researcher, for example. There were a few researchers who were extremely well-funded in the middle 1980s, or the early 80s, actually, to come up with, you know, what's causing AIDS. Well, in order to come up with that answer, HIV, they had to be lying through their teeth and cheating and faking research and doing all kinds of, you know, just criminal stuff. But the payoff was that whoever got to the finish line first and had his conclusions accepted, mainly by the government, would stand to make millions of dollars, celebrated around the world, enormous prestige, et cetera, et cetera. And so these people were kind of preyed on, you might say, but in a sort of a positive way, like, look, you've got to get to the finish line here. What kind of research do you have that looks promising? Oh, well, I don't know. You know, I've got this, but it's not really conclusive. No, no, no. You don't understand. If you don't forward your research, somebody else is going to get there first. So let's have a conversation. Let's sit down and talk about this, you know. And eventually, that person, that scientist, would be won over. And he would say, the hell with it. You know, this is as good as anybody's going to do, or he would rationalize it somehow to himself. And then all of a sudden, you had Luc Montagnier in Paris and Robert Gallo at the National Cancer Institute saying, we found the cause of AIDS. And then you had a press conference on television, no conclusive research ever published on the subject, where the United States government essentially rubber-stamped that in 1984 and said the cause of AIDS has been found. And then overnight, all the funding for all the research on the question of what causes AIDS was completely canceled and dried up. So that if you weren't now looking into how HIV causes AIDS, you were out in the cold. You couldn't get any money for research. It was all a prop job. It was totally manipulated from start to finish.
Hmm.
That's how it happened.
Wow. Okay. And again, Ellis, was he an, was this like an
Medavoy.
NSA operation? Or
Ellis Medavoy.
Yeah, was he
was
it NSA, CIA?
Primary operative in the field of trying to convince and successfully convince the planet that all you had to think about when you said AIDS was HIV.
Yeah.
AIDS, HIV, HIV, AIDS, they're synonymous. To weld that into the public consciousness, the government consciousness, the scientific research consciousness, the media consciousness, so that nobody could doubt it. And if anybody did, he would be called liar, conspiracy, lunatic, wacko, crazy, whatever.
Yeah. It's pretty difficult to round up people who are accurate in their calling them on this, such as yourself, and the very little relatively exposure that you get. It's not like no one knows they're up to this stuff, but you know, just everybody doesn't want to believe it. I guess there's a Super Bowl to watch or a Grammy to follow or something.
Yeah, well, this is especially on a question where everybody seems to be, you know, totally in agreement, and it becomes entirely politically incorrect to disagree. Like HIV and AIDS. I mean, you're not just talking about some little issue here. This is like, you know, a $1 trillion issue, and there's all kinds of social agendas connected with it and politically correct things to say. And so he was one of the guys that was key in making all that happen and also making it very difficult, if not impossible, for anybody with a counter opinion to get into the mainstream with it. So this is, you know, it's gigantic when you back up and look at it. And when I did, you know, it took me, you know, a couple of days to really come to terms with it, that this could be one of these gigantic propaganda operations.
Yeah.
And Ellis told me, you know, the nuts and the bolts and of the whole deal and how he did it and what he did, that would just absolutely hypnotize everybody.
So basically he was offering you a deathbed confession type of thing?
Or in a sense,
many of
like
them?
A reformed drunk, you know. I'm not doing this anymore. I've retired. I'm out of the game. I'm not telling, you know, nobody can know my name. But here's how you do it. Here's how it's done.
This is particularly insightful, rare information. So that's just merely one sliver of one component of your information.
In the Matrix Revealed.
In the Matrix Revealed. So, okay, so Ellis has some great deep insights for us. And I wanted to ask you specifically about that. The concept of, we all make our own world. We create our own world. So the way I see it, I guess I've created a bit of a mess. Seems like I got a lot of problems all over my little planet here. If it's true that we're making our own way and things are very problematic with war and a lot of the geopolitical stress, is that because we're just doing a poor job of collectively imagining a better place to live?
Yes, but also it isn't just imagining it. I mean, I'm not selling some little trick of manifestation where you snap your fingers and everything changes. This is about living a completely different kind of life. If a person begins to live through and by imagination and a creative force, then he is going to develop a vision that's very powerful about what he most profoundly desires. And then he is going to work to make that into fact in the world. And if you have a number of people doing this, it becomes extremely strong. It's not just sitting there meditating on something or thinking in a different way. But it starts with understanding that everything that we've been taught about psychology and the way the psychology of the human mind operates is either completely false or is only based on the ideas of Pavlov, which are the conditioned reflex. Something happens to you and then you do this. Something else happens and then you do that. That is completely irrelevant to what I'm talking about, because way more powerful than that could ever be is the creative force of the individual. But the individual has to be able to get himself together to live through and by imagination and find that vision of what he most profoundly desires and then commit himself to making it happen in the world. I give people tools for understanding and tools for practice so that people can actually dig into this, which we can get into. But in the second mega collection called Exit from the Matrix, there are between 50 and 100 imagination exercises, which I've developed and describe in full to people that they can do on a daily basis so that their imagination becomes that much more powerful. Their creative power becomes that much more strong and successful and useful, so that they now begin to realize that they've been living on some other dimension of themselves rather than at the highest level of their own creative power. And when they inhabit that higher level on a consistent basis, everything changes. Everything changes.
And people will even notice that in you, in the way you govern yourself and relate to others.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
That's going to be huge.
Yeah, I mean, it isn't anything that you can avoid. I was going to say, it's sort of like, you know, to use a crass metaphor, you used to pull up to their house in a broken-down wreck, you know, and now you're driving the kind of car that does 600 miles on salt flats in the desert. And they come out the front door, and they say, wow, what the hell happened? Yeah, they're going to notice for sure. They're going to notice quite definitely. And some people will not enjoy that, you know, because it points out to them their own sort of deficiencies, you might say, or their own refusal to do that for themselves.
Yeah, well, when you put a constructive reality together that eventually through other data input, you realize, wow, I'm way off track here. You know, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Way off track. In fact, I'll tell you a quick anecdote about that.
I'd love to hear it. And we'll get to that right after this break. We're with John Rappaport, of course, researcher, author. He ran for Congress. For crying out loud. I know that's one reason to hate him, but he didn't win, and he's one of us. He's one of us still, so everything's good. John, you have, this is amazing to me, because not only from what I've seen so far, and I haven't been through your course yet, but what I've seen of it and read about it, you have an 18-lesson course in something that should be available at any self-respecting school, and that is a course in logic and analysis. Can you tell us what logic and analysis is? Of course, I'm being sarcastic with my tone, but why do you feel the need to offer a logic and analysis course, I said with my tongue firmly in cheek? Is it because no one really seems to operate on those tenets anymore?
Yeah, that's the best reason I can think of.
Okay.
When you're dealing with the world of events that we see around us and the tons and floods of information around that, you know, it can become like a labyrinth, a maze, to try to analyze information. And when people go to school these days, they certainly don't learn logic. And that prevents them from being able to see what a line of reasoning or thought is. In fact, I just put out a piece about that today. You know, more or less, this is the way people go these days. They look at the whole sea of information, and they believe that they're entitled to just, well, I'm going to plug into it anywhere I want to, and then wherever, whatever my, you know, reaction seems to be, that's what I'm going to give voice to. That's what I'm going to say. It's kind of like a, you know, a supermarket, and I just pick products off the shelves whenever I feel like it, and I throw them into my cart. And then if I wind up getting sick because there's too many chemicals and sugar and crap in these, well, I don't even know about that. I don't want to know about it. Forget it. So logic is the way a line of reasoning works. It either works correctly or not. It's either what they call valid or invalid. And by understanding some of those principles and working with examples in this course, a person gets to become much more familiar with actually analyzing an article, a report, a book, a video, a whatever, and can say, wait a minute here, hold on a second. There's a flaw there. There's another one over there. It's about finding mistakes and flaws.
Yeah, I don't think I've gone, obviously, as deep into it as you, offering a complete 18-lesson course, but here's one thing where I find that all the time, and I found it very prevalent when George Bush was in office. There would be a tape that would turn up somewhere, purportedly from Osama bin Laden, whichever photographic representation of him you fancy, however you want to match them up, and they would always say, like, the headline in the paper, in the newspaper, would be CIA finds another bin Laden tape, or new bin Laden tape threatens West, or something of that nature. And then within the story, not even being debunked from elsewhere, within the story, it would say near the end of the story, like 15 paragraphs in, it would say the source of the tape and the person on the tape have not been verified up to CIA standards or whatever. And it's like the exact opposite of what the headline was. Of course, people only read the headline in the first few paragraphs, and they're on their way completely misinformed.
Yeah, that's exactly, you know, that's one of the most gross examples that you can find, but it you know, pops up all the time. Got to have a headline that's going to catch the attention, and then the story goes in a different direction.
Yeah.
And, you know, the vast bulk of people are not aware of this, not aware of that at all. And that's just the most gross example of non-logic. But, you know, you can get down into more nuanced and subtle variations on themes and so forth. And when you do, you find out that a lot of the information that you've been sucking up has no basis at all, absolutely none. And people need to be armed with this kind of a training, which normally in a sane world would happen in school, but it doesn't, so that they can analyze information and they can get down to the bottom of things and understand why they're either accepting or rejecting certain things.
Yeah. Well, I think people really it should be a basic thing in school. Obviously, school... the notion that I have of what school should be, I mean, not the regular, you know, the PSs all over the place that are just cramming the normal, you know, the diktats down everyone's throat.
And I can tell you that it's not there in schools on purpose.
Well, it has to be.
What happens is if a person is armed with this kind of knowledge and understanding, they start to become quite independent. They become independent in school. They become independent out of school, all over the place. And that is not the kind of society that is being built for us. And I can attest to that myself from my own experience, because it wasn't until college that I actually took a couple of courses in logic from an excellent teacher who was merciless. And so I became a complete pain in the ass in school, in college, because in other classes I would say, wait a minute, I just want to review what you just said, the last couple of things there, you know. And people began looking at me askance, like, this is not supposed to happen. You're not supposed to be able to point out that I got from A to B through some surreptitious, you know, bogus way. And but that's good. That's what you're trying to do. You're trying to make people who are independent, who don't care so much about what other people think, because they can actually analyze things themselves, and that's what logic does for you.
And then you find yourself doing that all the time now, I guess, John. You just treat everything like that naturally without thinking about it.
Yeah, you can turn it on and off. It's not something that becomes an obsession. It's not that you are, you know, screaming at everybody all day or anything like that, because you don't have to. You know the difference between being in a social situation, for example, and actually trying to analyze information. You know the difference between having a conversation at a party with six other people, you know, half of whom are, you know, already drunk, and actually reading a book and making notes because you want to write something about it, or you want to be able to understand a certain key issue. So that's one of the great things about it. It's a tool. You can use it when you want to, and you can put it away in the garage when you don't want to.
Mm-hmm. And you've got some other great interviews with some other people. I don't know how you came across these folks, but you've had a long career, but you've really lined up the mind work all-stars. You've got Jack True, which I don't believe that is his real name either. Is that right?
Well, it's his professional name.
Okay.
And he did, in fact, use it for many years as a hypnotherapist.
Okay, why is he so important? Why is he so important, and what are the main understandings that he puts forward that you decided to offer in your package there?
Jack and I met in the late 80s while I was looking around to write my first book, and he was instrumental in getting me a contract with a publisher to write AIDS, Inc. And then we began talking, and then I saw that this was going way beyond any of that. Jack was, to me, the most innovative hypnotherapist in the world, who eventually gave up doing hypnotherapy because, as he told me, the new patients walking in my door are already hypnotized. So my job is to unhypnotize them, and that was the basis of his most profound research. And we sort of collided because I had been writing fiction, painting for many years, and so I was already aware of the changes in my life that had happened through imagination, creative power, and so on. And what Jack was doing with his patients was he was getting them to access their sleeping imaginations. I mean, if I had to put it in a nutshell, that's what he was doing. And he found marvelous and ingenious ways of doing that. And people's lives changed enormously as a result of that. It's as if, this is really the landscape of consciousness. Jack would say, look, there's a part of your consciousness where you're just sort of thinking ordinary thoughts, and you are living your life, and you agree with this, you disagree with that. There's a certain amount of automatic reaction that's taking place and whatever. But there's another whole layer above that, which, you know, is enormous and unlimited, where you could be creative and you could be tapping in and accessing your imagination. But the problem is that for most people, they don't want to go there. They don't really want to know what that is. So they build a wall between those two parts of their consciousness.
Why do we do that? I have a quick example I want to tell you about. We just have a couple of minutes before we come back to the next segment. But there's a thing about singing and expressing yourself through singing. And I'm not a very good singer, but I'm not going to prove that right now either. But my daughter, who is 11, she is doing that classic kid thing where as she's trying to sing, when she gets to a higher note, she kind of holds on and holds back and says, oh, I can't hit that note. But she can hit that note, and she does hit that note. But it kind of rattles her when she hits it. There's a sort of a shaking joy almost that people seem to be afraid of when they're doing the right thing. And I feel like this is something that gets pressed out of us on a lot of different levels, not just singing.
You bet. I would call it the difference between ordinary you and extraordinary you. Ordinary you does not want to be rattled by discovering that he is actually extraordinary you, because if he did, he would tell you that would make everything change, and then I would have to reshape my life. I would prefer to just be ordinary me, because I get that. I understand it. I know what's required. I can do it. I can live the rest of my life that way and just kind of get through it and then, you know, die.
Okay, we're going to spend a little time now talking about the other package, too, just before you leave. We have to get going. We've got one more segment with John Rappaport. But in the first package, before we get to where is it? Exit from the Matrix. Can you do one of? Is it possible on radio even and to do one of the imagination exercises? Is there something that is 2 or 3 minutes that we could think about and try it our at home later?
Well, we can't actually do it here, but I can describe.
Okay, that's fine.
An exercise.
Yeah, it's probably safer that way. If people are driving, the last thing I need is
yeah, right.
Veering off the 405. Okay.
Okay. This would be a written exercise. Now, there are a number of written exercises that I give people, but some are not written. Many are not written. This just happens to be one that is. Actually, let me shift gears. I'm going to do a different one here.
Okay.
Okay. You take a walk in the morning. You go out or walk in your house. It doesn't matter where you walk, but it's a place you feel comfortable, uninterrupted. No cell phones, no whatever. You're just feeling fine. Could be a park, could walk down the street, whatever it is, okay? And as you walk, you take an idea. I'll give you a simple idea. Let's say power. The word power, the concept of power, or the sensation of power, or the feeling of power, whatever it is to you. And you, in your imagination, project that idea out from you. So you're no longer just kind of mulling around thinking about, oh, yeah, you're projecting it out in your imagination. Where are you projecting it? Projecting it onto the sidewalk, onto the street, onto cars, onto people, onto houses, onto trees, onto clouds, onto the sun, onto the moon, onto stars, whatever. You're doing this in your imagination. But you have to get the notion that your imagination has the potential to go out from you into the world. It isn't just all in your head, as the psychologist might try to have you believe. You can actually do this. And so you do it for 5 minutes or so. You just keep walking, and as you walk, you project with energy in your imagination this sense of power or idea of power outward from you. Boom, 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 like that. You do this for 5 minutes a day for 3 weeks, and you're probably going to notice something. You might notice you have more energy. You might notice you have more commitment and conviction. You might notice you even feel better. Okay? And yet, it's all happening in your imagination. But you're doing this as a projection from you out into the world. You're not mulling it, considering it, thinking about it, worrying about it. None of that nonsense. You're just doing that. Or, here's another one. You're standing in a room, quietly, no phones, no interruptions, no dogs, no cats. And you imagine that you are putting energy down through your body, from your chest, down through your belly, down through your legs, down through your feet, down into the floor of the room. If you're on the second floor, down into the first floor, down into the foundation of the building you're living in, down into the ground, down under the ground, down all the way into the center of the earth. And then you do it again. And then you do it again, and then you do it again. That's also imagination. Because you don't have an engine that's doing it. You're doing it through your imagination. Do that for 3 minutes a day. And you, a certain number of people would respond to that by saying, you know, I feel a greater sense of well-being. I feel more healthy. A certain kind of sluggishness or fatigue or whatever seems to be dispersing and going away. Yeah? Well, guess what? You did that. Well, how did I do that? Through your imagination. Your imagination has an effect on the physical, on your own body. It can have an effect on the world as well. Imagination is powerful. But you wouldn't know that unless you practiced it. Just in the same way that a guy who says, you know, I got to start working out. I'm overweight. I got to go to the gym. And then he goes to the gym for one day, tries to lift a few weights, can't really do it very well, and says, well, that doesn't work. No, it works if you go to the gym for an hour a day, every day. Or half hour a day, and you work out. If you do that for 6 months, you're going to feel stronger. You will, if you do it right. And in the same way, if you do these imagination exercises every day for a total of about 20 minutes or a half hour a day, after a while, you're going to feel like your basis of operation is shifting in your life. It's not going to be the same.
Right. Well, I think I'd like to give it a go.
Yeah, give it a go.
Yeah, I think I would. I think I'm gonna order. Not on the air, people. You don't have to hear me do that. As if I'm gonna tell all that many people my credit card number. No, but the headings in here are fantastic, and I really want to kick this open. I had plans to get this going on before the holidays, and that didn't work out. So. Yeah, I've just realized that I can find no logical reason not to get better at analysis. Here's a few headings on your website. I just wanted to spend a bit of time on those because they're kind of, people would think they're kind of out there, but I don't. Your power revealed and universes without end. So those are two different headings, but I wanted you to talk about that. And of course, you also have relationships. So I hope both people are expanding their minds in this way, or you're probably not going to relate to your spouse very well after you leave them in the dust with this. But as far as your power revealed, this is something like you're just explaining to us that we've been layered over with nonsense, and you're showing us how to peel it back. Is that pretty close?
Yeah, and it's similar to what I've been saying here, but I go into it in much greater depth because historically we have to realize that everything on this planet, in terms of society and civilization, has been lined up so that the individual is going to believe that he has less and less power. So it's also stripping away those layers as well as the personal layers that a person actually puts there to keep himself from having more and more and more power. Because let's face it, a lot of people, if you presented them with that possibility, would recoil. They would say, well, I don't know. I mean, there's going to be a certain place here where if I had more and more and yet even more power, I'm going to step back from that because that could be a bad thing. Yeah, where did that idea come from?
Well, that's got to be great for those that govern.
Yeah. And the person also has his own internal apprehensions about, you know, what would happen if I had more power. So it's sort of, it's not sort of, it's exactly, it's internal and it's external. It's what elites are doing on this planet and have been doing in one form or another forever. And it's what individuals have been doing to themselves, all of which ends up with severely limiting the power of the individual. So that's a shorthand version of what's in that particular seminar. And then, you know, to get to really upper levels of all of this, where you're really reaching way out there, but I've seen it happen, I've experienced it myself. At a certain point, when one is really making their most profound vision come true in the world, certain synchronicities, paranormal experiences begin to happen. They just do, because that person is now exceeding the whole landscape of the average, the normal, which is really the subnormal. He's going beyond that. And when that happens, certain kinds of experiences are going to occur, like being able to read somebody else's thoughts, know what's going to happen in the future, being able to, in some cases, which, you know, I've seen, affect people at a distance. And I'm not talking about to try to do bad things to them. I'm talking about just the opposite, to actually bring people up out of where they have sunk down to. Experiences like that happen without a word, without a conversation, being able to do that by creating the space or the rhythm or the frequency in which that happens for somebody else.
Seems like our daily lives are pretty well designed to counter against that at every turn. You mean you have to take a physical effort to make sure you can get into that zone.
Yeah, I'm saying that somebody who, you know, I'll give an example of a client who says to me, okay, so we've been working together for a little while now, and then I went away and now I'm back, and, you know, I'm doing the thing that I most want to in my life. You know, I finally discovered / admitted to myself what that is, and, you know, that's my vision. And it's big. It's not little. It's not like I want to paint my nails blue instead of red. This is big. And I'm living through and by my imagination to make this happen in the world, to actually fulfill it and make it happen. And as I've been doing that more and more and more and more and more, I find these extraordinary things are happening.
Well, John, that is where we're going to have to leave it. So that's a good place, don't you think?
Yeah, that's a great place.
Yeah, that's a good place to stop. We're thrilled to have John back, and obviously we're going to have him back later, because I'm going to be diving into some of this stuff personally, and I want to discuss my results with you, the audience, and with John. Thanks, John, for coming on.
Absolutely, Alan. Thanks a lot. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to Conspiracy Queries with Alan Park. Please offer comments or complaints by emailing conspiracyqueries@gmail.com or on Twitter @con_queries or at our website, conspiracyqueries.com. Thanks for listening.